Is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling the Cotton Party at 893-4923 and by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling them at 898-9525. Today I'm going to do something a little different here on North State Give and Take, and I'm going to interview someone who is very passionate about something and something that's very positive here in our community. And I'm going to interview Tom Hess from the Yoga Center of Chico, and we're going to talk about Iyengar yoga. I've known Tom for quite a while, and I've actually practiced yoga with him, so let's let him tell us about it. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Bobby. It's nice to be on your show. Okay, well, I'll just dig in. Iyengar yoga is a style of yoga created. Well, it's not really created. It's sort of like customized by a guy named BKS Iyengar. He was born in 1918 in Bellur, India, and he was raised and born in very dire circumstances. He had a tuberculosis as a child, as many of you know, and that in 1918 there was a severe flu epidemic, and you know, it wasn't a happy sight at that point in his life. And his father died when he was very young. So he had a very tough childhood, very, very ill health when he was young. But he had an opportunity when he was about 16. His sister was marrying somebody in another village not too far away named Krishnamacharya. Unbeknownst to Iyengar, Krishnamacharya was a very famous yogi that had spent like 7 or 8 years up in the Himalayas studying with very serious practitioners. He was a scholar. He was a Sanskrit scholar. He was very well known. But back in the early 20th century in India, yoga wasn't a real popular thing. I mean, you know, we're talking about a small portion of the population that were sort of keeping the ancient practices alive. So Krishnamacharya was sort of got to the top level of that era. And he was going to marry BKS's sister. So he married BKS's sister, and they're in this place far away. And then Krishnamacharya knows of BKS's struggle. He knows his father has died, and he needs some guidance. He needs some help. So he sent for BKS, and Krishnamacharya was going to go around the country doing yoga demonstrations to try to, you know, build up the practice. And he needed somebody to stay at his house to take care of his wife, which is BKS's sister. So he got BKS over there, and he was sort of like part of the household now. And so if you're in a part of the household of a yogi, a serious yogi, you practice. So Krishnamacharya took Iyengar on as a yoga student at the tender age of like 16. He was able to stay there for 2 years, and he was not really the top of the class, you might say. And Iyengar describes this time in his life as just brutal, you know, working 20 hours a day, being somewhat of a servant to this Krishnamacharya. But along the way, he was getting taught yoga. And it was like what Iyengar was put on this earth to do. He latched onto it. And then, so, you know, like Krishnamacharya would take this group of young boys around and do demonstrations, and Iyengar was part of that. But you know who else was a part of that? Was Patabi Joyce, the man who created Ashtanga Yoga. So both of these lineages start from the same school back in India. So anyway, Iyengar's path. So Krishnamacharya gets a request from a gym in Pune, India, to have him send a yoga teacher over to help teach yoga. He sort of had to send Iyengar because the people he was going to be teaching were young girls and women. You know, in India, in this time frame, you know, the women and men were very sort of separated, and he had to be very careful who he sent there. So Iyengar went to Pune, India, at the request of Krishnamacharya to do some teaching. That was it. That was the end of Iyengar's formal teaching with his guru, Krishnamacharya, just 2 years. But it piqued an interest in Iyengar to go deeper into yoga. And he started to develop his own body into a healthy, vibrant, alive. If you've looked at Light on Yoga, his famous book, you can see some of the fantastic postures he can do, did do. He's deceased. He died in 2014. So anyway, back in the 1930s, 1940s in Pune, India, and Iyengar, a single young man, is there in Pune, India, and he has this one small skill to teach yoga. And so he digs in, and this time must have been so difficult for him. He writes about only having a spoonful of rice a day because he was so poverty stricken. He would be riding his bicycle across town to teach for minuscule money. He was in dire straits. He tells stories of this time. He was in a big dormitory where single men lived. In this gym that Iyengar taught yoga were a big group of wrestlers. And where the wrestlers stayed was the same dormitory that Iyengar stayed in. So, you know, there were single young men. They hung out together, you know. These guys were so bulky and strong that they had difficulty doing simple tasks like using the bathroom and other simple things where they couldn't raise their arms over their head without their arms falling asleep. And they turned to Iyengar and say, hey, help us with these things. And so this was sort of the creativity element of Iyengar yoga starts right then. When he starts having people come to him with specific issues, and he creates from his understanding of yoga therapeutic, I hate to use the word therapeutic, it's not really therapy yet. It's just using the yoga practice as a means to make one's life better. That's enough. And then when you start looking at yoga through that lens, it changes everything. Okay, so let's continue the story. Iyengar starts to help these guys, and it's, you know, still not popular, hard sell. You know, in the old days, the way that the yogis survived was they had benefactors that kings would, you know, put them up, would pay their room and board, give them money. It wasn't like that after the British were here. The British weren't going to do that. So he had to make money teaching yoga. It was a struggle. This was back in the 30s. It's like in yoga, there's a word called samskara. It's an impression in ourselves that leads us to a path in life. You know, it's like we all have tendencies. We want to go towards the tendency of the thing that our profession that we want. His tendency was clearly yoga. He dove deep. He would go to the library, spend hours researching ancient yoga texts. He would spend days on the yoga mat perfecting these yoga asanas. And he would write his, and this sort of led to, in 1966, he wrote a very famous book, the most famous book on yoga called Light on Yoga. It's very much considered the Bible of yoga, even to this day. I have a copy of it at this studio. I reference it weekly. I look at that book and I still do. So it's sort of like the Bible of yoga, and it's an amazing text. Philosophically, anatomically, it's the thing. So he wrote this famous text, and slowly building it up. It was 1957 when he first came to the United States, but he was not welcome. He was not like a big deal. They had a hard time getting people in to see him, to take his classes, because he was Indian. He was colored skin. He had a lot of racism against him when he would travel in the 40s and 50s and 60s to Britain. He did a lot of world traveling. So there was a span of about 1960, late 50s to 1970, where he never came back to the United States because he wasn't well received to begin with. But eventually in 1976, he came, and then the spark was lit. It was Ann Arbor, Michigan. And there was a number of really attentive yogis who had gone to India to study with him, who invited him back in 1976. And that's when people like my teacher went and studied with him, and other teachers across the United States went and studied with him in 1976. When I first started yoga, I saw difference, 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 difference. And 35 years in now, it's like I see connection, 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 connection. So it's really about where you stand.
And you're talking about the different different types of yoga, per se. We call it different types of yoga?
Yeah, we can call it, okay, different types of yoga. Yeah, that was a good way of saying it. Okay. And Mr. Iyengar would do the same thing. If you came up to Mr. Iyengar today and said, what would you call your yoga? And he'd just say, yoga. He did not encourage his students to label it Iyengar yoga. Okay. But the differences of Iyengar yoga as compared to other styles of yoga. Number one is the use of props. We use blankets, blocks, bolsters, belts, and any number of things. And the purpose of the props isn't to be lazy on. The purpose of the props are for perception. The purpose of the props are to increase one's ability to put themselves in the position to gain the energetic benefits of that position. Now, okay, I threw out a word there, energy, or energetic benefits. Okay, that's nothing more than opening up, creating space, creating softness, creating stability where needed, firmness where needed. So props are beneficial. They're pretty, other styles of yoga have started to adopt the use of props, but I use them all the time. We are all sort of different physically. The props put us on a level playing field. Props, I can teach a class and have everybody straighten their legs in a forward bend if they put their hands on our blocks. If they had no blocks, it would be not as stable as that. So props are very primary in Iyengar yoga in its ability to bring everybody to a level playing field. Okay, the other thing that we do in Iyengar yoga is timing. We tend to stay in postures for a longer period of time. And so longer period of time, what's that mean? Well, you know, in an average yoga class, you're going to stay in your posture probably 15 to 30 seconds, something like that. Sometimes even less, sometimes even 5 seconds. Okay, so in Iyengar yoga, we stay much, depending on the posture, depending on the class, we might stay 30 seconds, we might stay for 5-10 minutes. And the reason for this, staying in a posture for a longer period of time, it gives us the ability to go inward and sort of study what the body is doing in this particular posture, how the legs are working, how the mind is working, how the breath is working. So this length of stay in a posture has benefits on that level.
We'll take a little break here from speaking with Tom Hess about Iyengar yoga. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico. This is North State Give and Take. And my name is Bobby Tryon. Back to our interview with Tom Hess about Iyengar yoga.
The other really nice thing about Iyengar yoga and the use of props and staying in postures for a long time, it's suitable for us as we grow older. you know, we're not jumping around a class anymore. We're not some 20 or 30 year old who can do a lot of stuff. I mean, my knee and my lower back and my shoulder limits my practice. Everybody's got limitations. If you stay in postures longer, you don't have to deal with those limitations so much. If you use props, the limitations don't have to be obstacles.
I'll add to that, just because of doing some of it, you don't become friends with your limitation, but you spend a little time with it. And I start to understand that in that it gives me a focus, becoming aware of my body. I mean, I realize that when I'm there, because I'm there long enough and I get a chance to kind of go, oh yeah. And I go around, I go back and forth between, oh, this is torture and awful, to, oh, look at that. And I see that. That's why I've appreciated it so much, because of the time kind of spent.
Absolutely. The next thing that sort of differentiates Iyengar yoga is alignment. This word alignment would be, if you were to go up to an average yoga teacher and say what they thought of Iyengar yoga, the first thing they'd say would be alignment, because that's what we focus so much of our attention on in the class. So what does alignment mean? Okay, our body are vehicles of energy, okay? Energy flows through us, around us, all around us. You know, this is like scientific fact. So, in certain positions, that energy flows more freely and more unobstructedly and with greater ease, okay? When you put your body in a correct alignment, this energy, or we call it prana in yoga, or energy, flows more freely. So that's without any posture. But then you put people in a posture, in a classical yoga posture, that even all of the other schools of yoga do the same postures for the most part. We just spend more time in them. We give them, Mr. Iyengar has taught us, and many senior teachers taught us, and his daughter Gita has taught us about alignment tools or techniques or awarenesses that we can teach the students. If you're walking into an average class, say my class, get you in a posture, and I start talking about, first of all, I get things aligned. Feet parallel, legs active, pelvis level, square, shoulders, all these. That makes the feeling or the energy even on the right and left side of the body. That feeling or energy is a something for you to focus your mind on. And that focused mind is the whole point of yoga. I mean, underneath Iyengar, behind Krishnamacharya, 2,500 years ago, it's written in the text, the goal of yoga is to still the fluctuations of the consciousness. And this is the way we do it. We get the body, you know, just like Bobby said, she started to consider. She said she went in to consider. She went in to look. That's what we do. We go in and we look and we see. And we see the alignment. We see the misalignment. We see the good alignment and so forth. It's a tool for introspection. Another thing that differentiates Iyengar yoga from other styles of yoga is sequencing. How do we put one posture, then the other posture, then the other posture, then the other posture? It sort of comes from again, Krishnamacharya, that root guru that is sort of so instrumental in all of yoga today. We really have to give him credit on this. He created a sequence of yoga practice, and it's practiced in Ashtanga yoga called the primary sequence.
One second now. Ashtanga. Just be clear on what Ashtanga is briefly.
Okay. Ashtanga yoga is the style of yoga that Patabi Joyce created and emphasized and is popular in the United States. So anyway, it's a set series of postures done in a sequential manner that has great, I might say, intelligence behind it, in that the way the sequences were put together. When I say sequence, what sequence the postures were presented, taught. In many styles of yoga, I can think of the two most popular styles of yoga, Bikram and Ashtanga. They have a set sequence. This is the sequence we do in every class. This is the sequence we're going to do in this class and so forth. Ashtanga, in Iyengar yoga, we have the teacher has free rein. And then in the Iyengar system, we have a very precise method and approach to teaching beginners, intermediate, advanced. The first yoga studio I stepped into in 1983 was an Iyengar yoga studio. And the one over in 20, it used to be the Iyengar Yoga Institute at 27th and Terrible in San Francisco. I had recently moved to San Francisco, and I had, I hate to compare myself to someone like Iyengar, but I had that itch, that inclination towards yoga. I had that inclination towards spiritual pursuit. You know, I had that inclination. I studied some Aikido, some Tai Chi. I did a bunch of the other types of spiritual work, did meditations and stuff like that. And so I had an inclination. So I stepped into an Iyengar yoga class and I thought, that's it. I can pursue the spirit. I can go inward and seek my spirituality. I can improve the body. And it made sense. The way that the practice is taught and practiced makes sense. It's the alignment issue. The alignment makes sense for somebody who thinks about physics and aligns and weights and levers. It just makes sense, all of the actions. So I went to my first yoga class program. But because I was working, I didn't, and there were segmented classes. It's not like these things now where you got to go 9 months every weekend and stuff. It's like I took a philosophy class 1 year, one semester I took asana one, second asana two. So it was broken up like that. So I spread that out over about 5 or 6 years just because of my life. I was busy. And it turns out that that time was very important. The problem with the types of yoga trainings that consolidate things up into a short period of time, it does not allow the participant to evolve with their own practice so that when they get into the teaching arena, it's not embodied. This embodiment, this work inside of us that we have done is what informs our teaching. So anyway, 6-7 years down the line, I get my first teaching gig. My yoga teacher in San Francisco calls me up. Tom, I'm sick. Go teach my class. I kept subbing for a year. She says, we got a slot Monday night. You want your slot? You want a regular class? I took a regular class. It was a Monday night. 5:30 to 7 class, something like that. In San Francisco, I was on cloud nine. I had my own yoga class in San Francisco. I was hot. So then, you know, I got a Tuesday night class at the Institute and so forth. So I'm starting to get my chops up. But then I make a life decision. My life decision is I want to get out of San Francisco. So I want to move up, and I have roots. I have some connection up here in Butte County. So I want to move in Butte County. So in 2020, I thought, well, I'm a pretty good yoga teacher. I've got good creds. I'm educated. I'm a smart guy. I'm going to move to Butte County and be a successful yoga teacher. And I opened a little yoga studio called, I even forget the name of it, but naive on one level, but brilliant on another level, because it got the eye of a very important person in Chico, Nancy Wiegman. Mm-hmm. Nancy Wiegman came over to me, and Nancy's one of my mentors. She's peer. She knows her yoga inside and out. She knew the value of a certification from the Iyengar system. So she says right away, she didn't even see me teach. She says, Tom, will you teach at Chico Sports Club? And by this time I had known that Chico Sports Club was the place to be in town for yoga. So I got a gig at Chico Sports Club. And that's where I've started to connect with people in Chico. And at first, there was about five of us who knew what Iyengar yoga was in Chico. It was a hard sell because it was a different way. It was a different approach. My personality is not one of warm and fuzzy. You know, I wasn't your typical yoga teacher. I came at it from an illogical, analytical viewpoint. So it was a little bit of a challenge for many to come to it. But over this time, it's been 20 years now.
You know, I remember that because I had come a couple times to the Chico Sports Club, and I said, I don't like it when Tom's there.
Bobby, you're not the only one. That, you know, this is the ego thing. It's like it was good for me those early years to have people walk away from me. Mm-hmm. Because it said to me that, Tom, you know a lot, but your approach needs to be improved. So I've worked on 20 years on improving my approach to yoga.
Okay, good.
So Nancy was a blessing to me, and we've of course become close friends over these years. And but then one day, a guy named Rex Stromness, one of my peers, a close friend of mine, comes up to me and says, "Tom, let's open a yoga studio." 2013, and I was at a time in my life when it was the perfect thing to do at the perfect time. So he and I, in 2013, opened up the Yoga Center of Chico, which is where I still currently teach. He does as well. So that's sort of my yoga story, and it continues to this day. If you really want to get to the depth of the practice, you got to sort of make a commitment. It's not like you got to change your life and wear special robes and stuff like that. You have to make a commitment to consistent practice over a long period of time, because that is the only place that this stuff really embodies itself within you. You can get benefits of it. You can get a stronger back. You can get longer hamstrings. You can get this and that, and that's great. But there's prizes underneath it all that are really worth the work.
Yes. And I believe you. Now, you said something about a website or a place to go about more information about Iyengar.
Right. Yoga. Okay. That would be the Iyengaus. I think it's .org. That's the United States National Organ Iyengar website.
It's
Iyengaus.
And that site has, if someone's, you know, their interest is piqued by our conversation, you can go there and get a little more information about Iyengar yoga.
Yes, and you can also get a list of the certified teachers in your area. So let's say there's an area, search for teachers. So that whole process I went through a 7-year period, I had to go to a test. I had to do a test. That test made me a certified Iyengar yoga teacher. I have been since 1995, and I've increased my certification. It's not just you get certified. There's like a bunch of certification levels. I'm up 2 or 3 levels. At any rate, if you go to this website and you type in your zip code, they'll tell you the certified teachers in your area. So if you typed it in 95928, I'd come up. So that's why there's few Iyengar yoga teachers in the world. It's really a lot of hard work, and the certification process is difficult, and you need to be well-educated, and you have to sort of commit to a lifetime of practice. Because let's say that – so you come to my class in Pune – I mean in Chico. So let's say you go to a class in Minneapolis. The beauty of Iyengar yoga is that if I'm a certified teacher here and they're a certified teacher over there, you're going to get the same level of instruction there's a lot of things different, personalities, sequences, the way they talk about the postures, but the same level of intelligent instruction from me as that person over there, because of the education that we've been involved in.
And the style of how it's presented. It's so different than, say, a flow yoga class. It's a different style of teaching.
Although flow yoga is... Surya Namaskar, which is a sun salute, is a subcomponent of Iyengar yoga. Although, me personally, I don't teach it so much, but I used to teach it.
And you move faster in it, is what I find. But I suppose you could slow that down.
Oh, yeah. I've been to Ashtanga classes that really good teachers could slow it down. I've even taught in that manner before, and there is benefit in that, and it's all good. So the point is, this Iyengar yoga has a little bit of a different viewpoint of it. This alignment, timing, precision, but all yoga is good if it's done with good intention and good mindfulness. The thing about the Iyengar yoga practice that really has resonated for me over the decades is its ability to change my life on an emotional, a thoughtful level. I don't react as much to things in the world. I'm more accepting. And I have to attribute this to the practice of yoga, because it's nothing I did. It's just, this is what I do. I practice, and this is the result of it. Mm-hmm. And it gives good meaning to life.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, you are inspiring to me. I'll say that to you. You knew that already. And I enjoy your classes, but I really always enjoy talking to you. And you always joke about that you could talk. And yes, you can. Thank you so much for talking to me about Iyengar Yoga.
Hey, my pleasure, Bobby. You know, it's my passion in life. I appreciate you coming to class on a regular basis.
I keep doing it. I do.
Okay.
All right, Tom. Thanks. Have a great day out there.
Bye-bye, Bobby.
Bye-bye.
You've just heard a pre-recorded interview with Tom Hess from the Yoga Center of Chico talking about Iyengar Yoga. You're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico, and my name is Bobby Tryon. Come back again next week at 6 p.m. on Tuesday for another interesting conversation with either a nonprofit or some interesting person doing some pretty passionate work here in Chico. All right, stay tuned for Ginger and Radioactive.
That's right.
She can say in her voice, in her way, does she love me? With her eyes, with her smile, with her belt, with her hands, with her money. I am the thesis of her prayers. Her nieces and her nephews are just pieces of the layers. Only one she loves as much as me is Jesus Christ and Taylor. I got a future song singing for my grandma. You singing too, but your grandma ain't my grandma. Mine's handmade, pan fried, sun dried, south side. And beat the devil by a landslide. Praying with her hands tied. President of my fan club, Santa. Something told me I should bring my
virginity.